Firstly, now the term remote work refers to the broad concept of an arrangement where work is fully or partly carried out at an alternative work site other than the default place of work. The policy objectives of the legislation are essentially to provide a legal framework around which requesting, approving or refusing a request for remote work can be based. So if you're an employer, you really got to get yourself up to speed. And with all of that in mind, HR company People Matters are putting in place a special event for all employers out there to actually upskill you and educate you on what exactly lies ahead in the context of employment contracts and protective leave and working time, all of the best HR practices in managing performances, particularly if your staff are now going to be working remotely. Noreen Coyne joins me from People Matters to tell me more about what lies ahead. Good morning, Noreen.
Good morning, Tammy. How are you? And thanks for having me on the program.
I'm well.
As you said, you're good.
Yes, I'm good.
As you said, it's choppy waters in HR. I mean, the past 12, 18 months, so much has been happening and so many new guidelines have been coming out. And even, I think, just this morning, Leo Varadkar has come out with a transitional protocol, which is more guidelines on safely returning to work, highlighting, you know, that the threat of the virus is still there, but obviously trying to get employees back to work and back to safe working and normal working. As you mentioned, the draft bill on the right to request remote working came out last week. And, you know, that has generated a lot of discussion because employees who have been working at home, albeit in an emergency situation for the last 2 years, have got used to this and would like to continue, while employers are keen in many cases to get people back to work.
Okay, so, there are some black and white scenarios. I mean, there are people who, for obvious reasons, if you're working on the production line in a factory, or you're a frontline nurse, or you're somebody who works in a radio program that requires a lot of technology, there ain't no way you can do that from home. So that doesn't really even come into the equation. And the reason I bring this up first, before we go through what you're going to be telling employers as part of what you're putting at their disposal, is where an employee makes an unreasonable request. In other words, if I say to my employer today, I want to do my radio program from the attic of my house from next week, and realistically, that isn't a possibility. Or somebody working on a factory floor says, well, why can't I work remotely from home if somebody up in the office can? How is an employer going to square that circle?
Well, this is where this new code of practice and this new bill, which probably won't be coming to legislation until early summer, but what it's going to do is going to set out the guidelines around the grounds that you can turn down that request and or accept that request. There's a lot of documentation around this, and it requires, and I will say every employer is now required to have a policy around remote working. So you will set out then what the person needs to do to apply for it, how they will assess their own workplace, the things, information they will need to provide to the employer. But then the employer, there's a whole list of reasons on which it can be turned down. The obvious one, which you mentioned, you know, it just cannot be done physically, you know, the nurse or whoever is providing the service or making a product, it can't be done remotely. But there are a lot of other reasons on which it can be turned down, like where the employer might have concerns, maybe around the protection of business confidentiality, maybe around the suitability of the home workspace that the employee is going to work from, internet connectivity, things like data protection, but most of all, health and safety. Because you have to remember that under health and safety legislation, the employer has the duty of care to provide a safe place of work for an employee. So it's very difficult for the employer to ensure that that is happening if the employee is working remotely, and it puts huge responsibilities back on employers. So what this code of practice and this legislation is going to do, it's going to set out how the requests can be made, but it doesn't say that the employer has to accede to that request. It's just saying the employer now has to consider it from the employee's perspective.
Okay, so we take, for example, I mean, over the last 2 years, an awful lot of businesses, because of COVID, where staff were working remotely and staff were saying, for example, they had pains in their backs because they hadn't a proper office chair, or that the screen on their home computer wasn't suitable because they were now working 8 hours a day from a computer that they purchased simply, you know, to browse the internet in the evening time. An awful lot of employers were buying furniture, were buying new apparatus for staff so that it made their working conditions more suitable. So why now are the government saying that, for example, something like, office space that isn't deemed to be adequate is okay. Another example, internet connection you mentioned. An employee might say to their employer, look, you know, you provide me with internet connection. It's your duty to do it, not mine.
And I think this is where we have to remember that ultimately the original contract of employment that the employee has with the employer is at that place of work where they were originally working. What happened over the past 2 years was due to public health restrictions, which we all had to comply with, an emergency situation, but it automatically defaults to the original contract of employment. So it is up to the employer to decide whether they will accede to continue with this arrangement, whether it is working for them or not. Because there have been impacts in terms of, we'll say, you know, performance, productivity, the impact on teamwork, maybe the overall culture of the organisation. And these are things that the employer will be able to take into account in making that decision. But ultimately, it is for them to make that decision. Because, as I said, the place of work ultimately defaults to the original contract of employment. What we had was purely an emergency situation for the last 2 years. We didn't think it was going to be 2 years, but it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a lot. What this is doing is providing guidelines as to how it can be worked out reasonably between an employer and an employee, but it doesn't automatically give rights.
Okay, and I that's important, and that's a good perspective for an employer, but not from an employee's viewpoint. And if you are an employer, let me know what exactly is happening in your organisation already. I see one in from Jim, says, I run a business, employ 25 people. During COVID, the majority of them worked from home, although some did come to work for various reasons. I don't want to give the purpose of what my business is. However, I currently have a situation where I have asked all staff members to attend for at least 2/3 days per week, commencing next week, and two of the employees are refusing to do so on the basis that they want evidence to prove that the work they were doing 24/7 from home was not up to standard. Jim says, this is a dilemma for me because their work was up to standard, but this seems to me like it's the employers who are going to be made suffer. Discuss.
Well, actually, the legislation is quite clear in that while it gives a list of reasons for declining requests, it also does say that it's not limited to those reasons. It is ultimately the subjective decision of the employer to decide whether this can or cannot work. Now, I mean, if you have an employee who really wants to do something and you want to hold on to that employee, there is the whole aspect of people will move with their feet if they're not happy and if this is not what they want to do. So there are things that you will have to take into account. And, you know, without commenting on any individual situation, it's something that has to be worked out with that employee.
So you're saying now that every business has to have a remote working policy. Is that a typed document?
Yes, it will be just like all the other policies that they're required to have, whether it's bullying, harassment, disciplinary grievance, like the whole area of HR and employment legislation. Unfortunately, you know, many employers take on people with the best will in the world. They need a job to be done. But there is a whole aspect of policies, contracts that need to be in place to protect the employer as much as to protect the employee, and so that everybody is clear from the start what's the foundations of that relationship and everybody knows what's acceptable and what's not. And it makes it much easier as you go on by having all of those in place. And they are some of the things that we will be covering on the training. It's just to upskill owners, managers, particularly smaller businesses that don't maybe have a HR department, that would have the basics in making sure those essential policies are in place. Because if a claim is taken, and with the right to request remote working, claims can be taken to the Workplace Relations Commission as well, if the employer doesn't have that policy in place or doesn't consider the request.
And will it be required by law to have this policy?
Yes, it will be. It will be part, as I said, the legislation, probably the details of it we won't know until June, but certainly in the heads of the agreement, it will be required, a legal requirement, just like a bullying harassment policy, health and safety policy, all of those other things. It is a legal requirement to have that in place when you employ somebody.
Yeah, there's loads of calls.
So those things are subject to... Some of those things are all subject to an audit by the WRC, or often what happens, sometimes people may never be audited, but it's when a claim comes in on something else, then all of the other things, well, did you have a policy on this and did you have the policy on this? And it's a further wrap on the knuckles for the employers. So it is really about getting all of that paperwork and having the policies clear and communicated to employees so there's no misunderstandings.
As I say, there's an awful lot of calls coming in from employers and all sorts of scenarios are coming up. One employer is saying that he has a situation where he has some staff working remotely, others who have to come into work for various reasons. The ones who are coming into work are now demanding that they get paid more than those who are working remotely. Is that going to be another headache for employers?
people will default to their original contracts of employment. They're contracted to do a job. Now, I said I won't comment on any individual situation. But what happened over the last 2 years was an emergency situation. It was public restrictions, public health restrictions. So people's contract of employment is as it always was. If that's to change, this is about something about sitting down and discussing with individual people the reasons why it will change, how it will change, and if there is change in salary or whatever that's for. But there's no absolute right to something like that because that's your contract of employment.
Okay. And ultimately, it does come back to that. I know you mentioned that employees can go to, you know, the Employment Equality or Tribunal and sort this out. But surely a contract is a contract.
A contract is a contract, and I know employees can go to the Workplace Relations Commission, Tommy, but I would say, and this is where an awful lot of our work is, I mean, as I said to people, my job isn't necessarily representing people at the WRC, our job is to keep employers and employees out of the WRC. If this can be resolved long before it goes to the WRC, it's a win-win for everyone. What happens when it goes to the WRC, you have winners and losers, and ultimately, you know, somebody may end up leaving the party, and that's not ideal. Whereas if you can sit down and agree what works best for you as an employer, it's a very difficult market at the moment in terms of recruitment as well. So ideally, it's about sitting down, agreeing what works best for you and what work can work best for your employee. And that may be an agreement where it's a little bit of both and there's a little bit of give and take on both sides. But as I said, that's something that every relationship you need to work out with those employees.
So tell me, Noreen, what you've put in place. You've organised, is it a series of talks?
Yes. It's a series of training modules. They're short, they're 3-hour training modules. You can take one or all or pick which ones suit the best. But the topics that it's the first Thursday of every month. It's the HR Learning Academy. We've called it HR without the headache because most of the queries we get, you know, people will say, oh, God, you know, this is such a headache and HR is such a headache. And it shouldn't be, because if things are put in place right from the start, HR works really well and you will get the best out of your people. So we have 6 different modules. They're all on our website, www.peoplematters.ie, HR Learning Academy, or just email hrqueries@peoplematters.ie. You can pick one module or pick all 6. Because as I said, the topics, absence management, the statutory sick pay is coming up now for companies, which a lot of people won't have allowed for. So there's a lot of different areas which are changing, and it's really important to have that knowledge and to have those policies and have the agreements in place with your employees.
All right, so it's peoplematters.ie if you want to find out more. Robert says, will the employer say to the employee, now, if you carry on working here like that, I'll send you home. Does that mean I have an option to work from home, or am I getting dismissed? I think that might be tongue-in-cheek. I'm not sure. And loads of others are, a lot of employers are really worried about this. Should they be worried?
I don't think they should be worried, because I think that as more and more guidelines come out, it is providing correct steps as to how things should be handled and dealt with. What's happening is that people aren't informed enough, or don't, like the Workplace Relations Commission, they have a really good website. All the codes of practice, all the legislation is in very plain English. But sometimes, you know, you take on people and work gets busy and it just gets too busy to look back at the basics. And instead, having those basics in place, it's not getting more onerous on employers. It's just about being aware and being informed. Being informed means it makes everything much easier.
Okay. So knowledge is a very important tool, and you can only get that knowledge by understanding what exactly is going to be proposed. I imagine there's going to be counter proposals put by opposition parties as to what might be or may not be included. So maybe lobbying the local TD if you have an issue as an employer, or indeed an employee, wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, these things take a lot of people. I know the discussions last week was that, oh, all employees can go remote working. This was not the purpose of the legislation. It's that they have the right to request it. It doesn't mean you have to, you know, allow that. So it is about understanding exactly what the guidelines are, because the legislation protects employers just as much as it protects employees.
Okay, well, let the word spread. These sessions, 3-hour sessions, did you say the first Thursday of every month?
Yeah, first Thursday of every month. And, you know, we provide ongoing HR consulting to clients right across, you know, all types of small and medium enterprises, handbooks, employees. And if anybody wants to contact us directly, absolutely, we can help them out and just putting a policy together.
Okay, peoplematters.ie. And if you are an employer, it really is in your interest not to sweep this one under the carpet, because I know that Leo Varadkar is quite anxious to have this actually in force probably by the summer.
Absolutely. I mean, they're very much, they have decided that hybrid working and, you know, remote working is the way to go. This is something that they're trying to, I suppose, promote from a public sector point of view. Work, we all know the world of work has changed so much in the past number of years. Like, work is no longer a place. People want to have options. People want to be able to work from home, be able to work while they're on summer holidays or whatever that is. And that can be done, but there does need to be guidelines in place.
All right. Well, listen, it's going to be a busy time for you, I hope. Peoplematters.ie if you want to send or check out their website there about those events starting on the first Thursday of February. Noreen Coyne from People Matters HR Company, thanks a lot for joining us.